Thank you for joining me on the Practice Human podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Casella. I had a great time interviewing Diana Zotos the other day. Diana is a physical therapist and a yoga teacher, so you can imagine why we had a really great conversation with me also coming from yoga and now in school for physical therapy. Diana completed her master's degree in physical therapy at Hunter College, which is where I'm currently in school, and is in the process of doing some research work at Hunter in a study that involves yoga. So I had a lot of questions for her about that. She told me a little bit about her educational programs that her and her colleagues lead with Three's Physi Yoga Method. So if you want to find out a little bit more about Diana, her website is dianazotos.com. I'll put all of this in the episode notes. Also, her programs, her educational programs through Three's Physi Yoga Method are at threesphysyoga.com. I wanted to find out a little bit more about her educational programs. I find it super interesting that in her program, she has a teacher training for yoga teachers through the lens of physical therapy. She also has a yoga training that is geared toward physical therapists. So I love chatting with her about the way that these worlds combine. And finally, I'm still buzzing a little bit from my weekend. This past weekend, I attended the APTA, the American Physical Therapy Association, combined sections meeting in Washington, D.C. And so it was all of the specialty areas in physical therapy with really inspiring presenters. And I've always had a bit of an interest in women's health and pelvic health. And while at the conference, I found myself drawn toward a lot of the women's health sessions. When I got there in the room, I felt like I'd found my people. So it's kind of a shame I chatted with Diana before I attended these sessions, or I would have even more questions for her. But she also specializes in women's health and pelvic health. So we had a little bit of talk about that as well. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Diana. Hi, Diana. Thank you for coming on the podcast. It is great to finally talk to you because I have a lot of questions from all of the work that you do that brings together yoga and physical therapy. I was wondering if you could just start with a little bit about what your practice is like right now, personal practice, movement practice, physical endeavors, life endeavors as they relate sure. to physical endeavors, and then also your teaching and your practice as a therapist.
Sure. Well, Caitlin, thank you so much for having me. This is very exciting. I love sharing the work that we do and my personal story. So I'm really excited to be here. Thanks again. So a little bit about me. Let's see. I am excited that I will be turning 40 this year. And that has been quite an interesting milestone to come because it's really made me reflect upon my personal movement practice.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of different roads in my personal movement practice, so it's interesting to see where I am now, for me anyway. I first began my personal movement practice in a gym, and I was a personal trainer, and I became a strength and conditioning specialist while I was in school for PT. Cool. And then I evolved into starting to practice yoga, and that took me on a totally different path. And I finally started to venture into Pilates and learning a lot about Pilates as well as becoming a physical therapist. And the way I worked personally in my body then was intense. It was fitness first. For my mind and my body, mm-hmm. but fitness first and then person second. And I think what's interesting now as I'm approaching my 40th year is I've been able to kind of say no to the demands of being not being fit, but adhering to my fitness routine in the balance of trying to be more open and understanding to what I personally need, and whether it's just being quiet or sitting with a cup of tea instead of rushing up to the gym or to a yoga class. So now my fitness routine, sorry, that was a long aside, but that's where I am, is composed of all of those different components. It's some days I'll go to the gym and I'll take the trap bar and do a bunch of deadlifts, because that's my functional training for lifting three children all day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll head to the Pilates studio and do a reformer and a chair class, which I love because it gets me connected with my body in a different way. It is the rehab I need as a postpartum mom of three children. And it just makes me feel more connected. Or sometimes I'll go to a yoga class, and that's a little less common. I have to be really careful about the teachers I choose. And I have, you know, I'm always the one in the back of the class kind of going at her own pace, doing her own thing with my eyes closed the whole time, just connecting and being aware and breathing, and obviously not focused on the shapes. So I'd say those are mainly my three true practices. I consider myself someone who really works with movement awareness and breath. And so I'd say that my diet of movement and awareness is full. And I really try to work all of that into my day-to-day life because, like I said, I have three kids and also a business. So I don't always get out to work out and exercise. So it trickles into my day-to-day life.
Great.
It sounds cliche, but it's, you know, going up the stairs or going for a walk and just being aware. And so what I work on and what my business is and what my practice looks like, it's also evolved. I began my PT practice at the Hospital for Special Surgery in 2006, and I left after my first child was born and started to run my own private practice, which consisted of just seeing people in their homes.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, so that evolved. Cool. I'd say I'd get one or two patients and I'd see them a couple of times a week, and slowly it started to build from there. And now, I think at the height of it, I was seeing 20 to 25 people during a week.
Wow.
And that was me just hustling around, running around the city.
Yeah, totally.
To see clients. Yeah. and making a ton of money, but also just being exhausted and managing a schedule and managing children and managing invoices and notes and payments.
Right.
So that became a lot. But that was also a really rewarding experience because each session was an hour. It was one-on-one. Mm-hmm. It was the comfort of their own home. And what that does is it really allows you to see a person wholly. So that's the mind, the body, the spirit, to take your time to see what works physically, emotionally, and see what doesn't work. And it really helped me hone my skill as a physio yoga teacher. So someone who, I think administers physical therapy through the lens of yoga. And
right.
That would be the eight limbs of yoga, not just the asana component and the movement component, but, you know, do no harm and be true to yourself components as well. So now I'm living in Long Island and I have a small private client practice. I'll either have people in my homes or I'll go visit clients. But now I'm seeing maybe five or six people a week.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of my professional life goes to the method that I've co-developed with two other fantastic women called the Threes Physioga Method.
So great. Well, thanks for sharing all of that background. And it's all interesting stuff for me to hear too that I didn't know about. I didn't know you did all that like home visit PT when you first started. And I can imagine that it helps you too to relate to yoga teachers today who are also hustling all around the city, that people are doing a lot of private yoga sessions, which I've done for a number of years. And yeah, it is a hustle for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's such a change too, or such a transition now to where you are working mostly from home. And
yep.
And how many of the, roughly just for yourself in terms of teaching, how many of those trainings do you tend to offer in a year, or how frequently?
So the Threes Physioga Method deliverables or products that we offer, there's a bunch. So it's not just the advanced teacher training. we have a 100-hour advanced teacher training, which we've offered 3 times. And then it was every year, once a year in New York City. We took last year off. My partner had a baby. I had a baby or something like that. Somebody, all of us had a baby in the last year.
So yeah.
And then we have one upcoming this upcoming fall, 2019, starts in October, 3 weekends. And that will be the full 100 hour. And that's at Now Yoga in New York City.
Cool.
Yeah. We also offer a full introductory weekend course to the Threes Phys Yoga Method, which is applying yoga as modality in physical therapy. And that's for physical therapists, PTAs or physical therapy student assistants and physical therapy students.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in February.
Yeah.
We also have a foundations program. So it's anywhere from a 15 to 25 hour anatomy insert. We've always inserted it into a 200-hour teacher training program.
Great.
That's developed by my partner, Emily, and she's also a PT. And she's brought that to a lot of different 200-hour trainings, and that's expanding. And then we've got a bunch of different workshops and things.
Right.
So we've got the resistance band workshops that we've co-developed with Julia Plein, and teaching a lot of kinetic core canister workshops.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, lots of different things.
I think I took a kinetic core canister workshop with you at YogaWorks because you came there as a like a teacher's workshop for the teachers.
Yes.
And and that was really, it was before I had started this path toward PT school. And it was kind of the first I'd really thought about the core canister, at least in terms of the top and bottom and sides and what makes that up. Because I don't think it was ever taught to me in that way in any of the yoga anatomy trainings that I'd taken. And now I'm starting to hear all about it as I'm in PT school. And when I was doing my volunteer hours to apply to PT school, there were therapists that were talking about that just in clinic patients as well. So I was like, oh, yeah. It's like a really important and interesting piece. And I know you do a lot of pelvic floor work as well, right? Or I think I heard that, yeah.
So I think a large part of that course has started to become the pelvic floor work.
Yeah.
Because it's just so under looked at, valued, appreciated, understood.
Yeah, and I've had in teaching yoga 200-hour trainings, I've had so many questions come up from students about pelvic floor, and they're like, why is there in the anatomy, why aren't we covering anything on that? Or will we get to anything about that?
Sure.
And my answer always just has to be, it's, you know, unfortunately, it's not a big part of the curriculum. And I always recommend that they continue their education with, like, that could be a whole 100-hour course just on working on pelvic floor. So, yeah, and I think it's really undertaught in terms of the anatomy and also just muscle physiology in yoga trainings that, it's super valuable. Yeah. Just understanding, even just the relationship between diaphragm and pelvic floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a large part of what we do in the kinetic core and also our 100 hour. And as I mentioned to you earlier, it's the hope to sort of, when we get a little bit more free time, develop something for postpartum women. And that would be also a large part of that. I mean, it's postpartum, it's prenatal, it's menopausal. There's so many issues that arise when you're menopausal.
Mm.
It's hip pain, low back pain. Yeah, it's so involved in that that region, that lower girdle region, bladder health, that it needs to be addressed. But I think people kind of think it's very complex, but you just take it one muscle and one layer at a time, and you start simply. And I think it's easy to understand if you have someone who can really break it down for you.
Yeah.
And it's easily accessed with awareness and breath, which is the other powerful thing. It's not, it's one of those wonderful things where you can actually make lasting changes in its function and tone just with your breath and awareness. That's a wonderful tool. And that's something that us as yoga teachers know how to do really well.
Oh, big time. And and it's great that that's where the yoga component can come in and your skills as a yoga teacher can come in and working with patients in the physical therapy setting. And it's one of the reasons I was really excited to talk to you is on this podcast, I'm trying to like center it around interdisciplinary work. And there's a lot of yoga teachers who listen to this. And also I'm in school, obviously, for physical therapy. So I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about your yoga training for physical therapists versus your yoga training for yoga teachers through a physical therapist lens. Cause I think it's awesome that you go both ways with that. And I think that's really unique. I don't know that there's anybody else doing that from both sides. So I don't
it's
know.
It's hard for our brains.
Even just saying those words of like the two different, it's like
I know.
A mouthful, but yeah. Like, what do you think, for example, the main takeaways or gains are for yoga teachers seeing through this physical therapy lens and also for physical therapists looking at things through a yoga lens?
The ones who have developed all of our coursework are primarily all PTs first. Mm-hmm. But it was always easiest for us to teach yoga teachers in that sense because we had so much to offer from the physical therapy perspective. Mm-hmm. And I'd say what we really try to make the take home for the yoga teachers is there's no recipe for how you're going to, quote, solve a particular issue for a client or in a class. And so what we try to do is really open up the eyes and the minds of the yoga teacher to utilize the tools that we teach them to educate and make informed decisions. On how to attend to the person, the body, the mind, or the group of people in front of you. And I think that's a big difference in saying like, hey, my person has hip pain, or if you go into one of those large Facebook groups, and it's like, I've got hip pain. Somebody shoot me a list of exercise. And, right. And I kind of cringe every time I see that because it's just not how it works. And it's just not responsible practice for a PT to tackle pain or an issue that way. And so what I try to do without teaching yoga teachers to be PTs is to give them as much information as I can. So we have three themes in the training for yoga teachers. So the first theme is the knowledge foundations. Knowledge foundations could be anywhere from learning about the foot anatomy, physiology, and kinesiology, or it could be learning about the nervous system and the way that the nervous system interacts with the breath. So say we teach you all of that information about that. And then the second theme is the investigation. The investigation is a system of assessment, biopsychosocial emotional assessment. And so assessing movement with our functional movement assessment tool, but also assessing the person inside and out holistically, and then using those assessments to identify problems to restore. The final theme is the restoration. And then we have a bunch of different tools of restoration. Some of them are release techniques. Some are awareness techniques, breathing techniques, functional training, chain expansion, which is, harnessing tensegrity. And so I'd say that we spend the 100 hours really thoroughly going through that for the entire body and the mind and the breath. And then there's a lot of putting it all together, tons of case studies, bringing in outside bodies, looking at each other, and moving on from there. So that's like teaching the yoga teachers how to be independent thinkers using a lot of knowledge that we're giving them.
So great. The independent thinkers part is like key, I think, for yoga teachers.
We hit so much, that first weekend we hit so much resistance. It's like, well, give me the answer. So it's really about trying to create the foundations of knowledge for the yoga teachers to become independent thinkers and problem solvers when they're trying to teach a specific theme in class or work one-on-one with a client who might have a particular issue. And we hit a lot of resistance that first day, that first weekend, when yoga teachers are just asking for the answers. It's a tough sell, but eventually we get them to start really thinking on their own and problem solve. And they start to understand why. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you learn as a physical therapist is in order to be a really good physical therapist, you really need to look at each person individually. And that not only gives you the power to think and play, but it also gives you ability to connect. Mm. And connecting with your client, your patient, is like 90% of why they feel better, studies have shown.
Oh, sure. So, yeah, yeah, like just the spending time together with a person in a session.
Hearing them, actually hearing them, actually listening, actually coming up with goals and a plan together instead of just administering PT or exercises to them.
Sure.
Like, you need to be involved. And so that's a lot of what we try to share.
Cool.
Yeah. So then we flip it, right? So then, so this was harder for us to figure out how to teach PTs, and the audience is way different, right? The mm-hmm. set of thinkers is generally pretty different, so we really had to just deliver a different course entirely to physical therapists. We learned over many iterations. But we're teaching them our model, so we're teaching them what yoga is, and then how to bridge the gap. What does it look like to use yoga as a modality? How do you administer it? How do you write your notes for it? How do you bill for it? How do you code for it? Hmm. So we start there, and then we start to teach them about a biopsychosocial intake, and how coming from the middle, this middle path of communication, and not being an extremist and really following those values of yoga are important to keep your client engaged and in a sort of great place, nervous system wise, to make lasting changes. We teach them about our assessment tool. We teach them about how pain science and the current research in pain science can relate to yoga and awareness. Yes, there's a big push in physical therapy to start moving towards cognitive behavioral therapy for pain science.
Right.
And so we kind of like flirt with that by using awareness and mindfulness.
Cool.
As a way to work with pain science.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
We teach the breath. Yeah, breath mechanics, how to use breath for the nervous system, but also how to use it for, you know, thoracic mobility and rib mobility. There's lots of breakouts. I'm looking at the agenda as we speak, just giving you an overview. And then we do teach them our method, the investigation, the restoration, and the assessment tool for the different parts of the body. One of the cooler things that we started including is the functional progressions using asana. So building up, breaking down. Because if you're a PT, you don't know all the yoga poses. You don't know the components of a Warrior One. If you have a patient who wants to get back to Warrior One, you don't really understand all the foot, ankle, hip, knee mobility need. And so we break it down as PTs would break things down and build it back up.
Cool.
And then yoga as a return to sport or job or activity modality. Hmm. So those are some of the highlights, and it's so exciting. And so fun to teach. So, yeah, we are firing up for that one in a little bit over a month. And I think it's full. I think I heard. So it's exciting.
It's really great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the combination of tools is so valuable. Fantastic.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I don't develop any of this on my own. I have such an amazing group of people that all work with me. And I've got my partner, Emily, who's also a PT, and she's in Warwick. I've got my partner, Helen, who's a PT and yoga teacher, and she's in London. We have a peds therapist who's in Philadelphia who works at CHOP. We have an OCS physical therapist, so she's orthopedic specialty certified, and she's still working at HSS, so we've got a lot of great brains.
Yeah.
Firing. Yeah. So, but the three directors, me and Emily and Helen, kind of oversee the content, but Deb, who's the peds therapist, will insert her stuff and we'll sort of work with it. And then Kara, who's the OCS and at HSS, will, she does a lot of continuing education with pain science. So she's done several things cool. where she's Norm mostly. And so we kind of assimilate it all together so that it makes sense, but it does come from different brains, which is so nice because mm-hmm. if it was just me or just one of us, it wouldn't have that sort of richness and multidimensional level learning that I feel like it does have.
Hmm.
Yeah. Where we can be like, what are you trying to say here, dude? Cause I don't get it. And we just, you know, we say that to each other a lot. Or like, how are they actually going to learn this? And it's that constant checking in, which I think makes it better and better.
Yeah, and having just someone to bounce ideas off of yeah. and come up with things together, so you're not just in this little kind of echo chamber of your own head. Or
yeah,
and also to have someone to bounce ideas off of that can potentially. Like critique or go against what yes. you're saying to make you rework things and fine tune things. And that was one of my huge takeaways from my first term in PT school when I took my research design class was uh-huh. how important it is to have a critic on your team or someone who's yeah. going to be like the one that's sort of combing over the skeptic who's going to comb over everything yeah. and be like, well, I don't know. It's such a valuable thing. And I think especially in the yoga world, we can get with a method or a lineage or something, we can get really wrapped up in the way because the teacher says, so then that's yeah. what that person's student learns and then on and on and on from teacher to student, teacher to student, where there's never anyone along the way that's in a position where they feel like they can really speak up against that.
Yeah.
You know, it's in that kind of hierarchical model. It's really exciting to have a team of people who can work with the information.
We totally do. And I think when we do teach it too, we're really open because I don't know. I think there's just so many different ways to look at things and so many different ways to look at people and bodies and mm-hmm. yeah, we're just really open about it and not quick to say absolutes. Years and years and years of looking at people, you just see everything.
I wanted to ask you about the project that you're working on currently with Hunter, your research project, if you want to speak on that. I mean, I don't know even. I know I talked to a couple of the third years who are involved in it, and I don't know where you're at yeah. in the process, but I'd love to hear a little snapshot at least of what's happening yeah. there.
So this is such a long time coming. So Kara, who's a DPT OCS at HSS, and I have co-developed a functional movement assessment based in asana. Mm-hmm. So in the PT world, in the personal training world, there's a tool that exists called the FMS, and it consists of a bunch of poses, and it's a way for personal trainers to communicate with physical therapists, primarily in the sport world or personal training world, but it's a communication tool. And so a large part of our mission is to bridge the gap between yoga teachers and physical therapists. And so this research tool mm-hmm. fits into that mission. We're trying to say, okay, here's so-and-so patient recovering from low back pain, seeing a PT for 4 or 5 sessions, looks like insurance is going to start to run out. Let's think of a plan. Maybe that plan is that person continues on with a physio yoga teacher and the physical therapist and the physio yoga teacher communicate with each other about possible movement dysfunctions or faults or abnormalities or whatever you want to call them that person has been presenting with in PT. And let's communicate that specifically to the physio yoga teacher so that they can work on them. Because perhaps in that instance for that person, that's what's contributing or thought to be contributing to their pain or lack of function. There's no absolutes. So we developed this tool. So it consists of, I think, 12 or 13 different poses. We break it down into upper body, lower body, and trunk or core. And each movement has a list of parameters that we're looking for. So if someone's doing an Utkatasana or a squat pose, we're looking at, for example, if the navicular hits the floor or if the first ray elevates off the ground. So if someone's supinating or pronating, if they're moving into mm-hmm. genuvalium, knock knee varum. So the study is we've taken the four lower body components of the movement assessment. We have videoed 50 subjects at Hunter College mm-hmm. From four different camera angles. And we have sat with those videos and we have rated the videos independently. So it's myself and Kara, which are the two expert raters, and then two of the people that we've trained that are yoga teachers. And so we're comparing to see if myself and Kara get the same or reliable results or similar results to the non-experts, the two yoga teachers. And so we've done that once at time zero, and then we take 2 weeks off, and then we do it all over again. Mm-hmm. We look at the videos all over again, and that's intra-rater reliability. So it's, do I personally get the same results when I look at the videos at time zero and time 2 weeks? And so what that'll do is that'll give us an idea of this tool is reliable, that the way it exists now. And so right now, as mm-hmm. we speak, our statistician at Hospital for Special Surgery is plugging a million numbers around in a million ways, I'm sure, to try and give us some results. We don't have anything yet, but I know that whatever we do get, we're going to learn a lot from. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we are. So once we do get something, we will hopefully submit to a journal. We were going to submit to one journal. I think we're going to miss the deadline, but we will submit. And then hopefully we can take it to CSM next year, 2020. So that's where we are. Mm-hmm. And then we'll learn, and then we will do the next component. Because that's how you really validate a tool, is by testing its reliability. And so we feel like we need to do that before we sort of share it with the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Great.
And yeah, that's it. So it's interesting. We had to, through the lit review, you find a lot of different studies evaluating the FMS, which is the personal trainer model. And mm-hmm. I think they initially developed it to predict injury. And so as like this pendulum has shifted away from the biomechanics model into this cognitive behavioral therapy thought and just move and load instead of movement faults, we found that the FMS doesn't really predict injury. And we never really sought out to do that with our tool. It was always a communication tool, which is like, let's use it so that a PT and a yoga teacher can speak the same language. And so, yeah, that's where we're headed with it. Yeah. It takes a lot of time.
It does. I know it's such a long process. And
yeah, we have to like submit so many different applications to this board called the International Review Board. Mm-hmm. And I've done studies in the past while I was working at HSS, but doing it on your own is like a different animal. And we didn't even apply for funding this time, but if I ever do it again, I will apply for every grant I can to help out, get some people to help out and pay them. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. That's always helpful.
Totally.
in any endeavor, yeah, I think, exactly. Especially something that spans so much time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's great you're doing that. I know there seems to be a kind of a gap in the literature and research related specifically to yoga, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And maybe it's coming along.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have no actual quantifiable data in front of me, but I do get a Google Scholar alert whenever I can. And it's, there's a lot of research, but it's not, I don't see many that are based in an orthopedic mindset. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see a lot of mental health, for systemic disease, quality of life,
mindfulness, meditation practice, and things like that as well. The other just last little thing that I wanted to talk to you about, you had mentioned a while back, I think when you're speaking of your work in home visits and the amount of time that you spend with a patient, the full hour that you have one-on-one with a patient and the value of that kind of personal time, made me think of a conversation that was happening on a thread on Instagram where we were discussing when someone has musculoskeletal pain, perhaps the first provider to go to would be a physical therapist because of that direct one-on-one, like mm-hmm. so much one-on-one time that the therapist has to spend with the patient and in actual physical evaluation. And I was wondering if you were interested, if you wanted to speak on that a little bit more, just the value of potentially seeing a physical therapist mm-hmm. as a first stop mm-hmm. when there's mm-hmm. physical pain.
That's something I feel pretty strongly about, having been a PT for 12, 13 years now. So what's happened in PT is that now we've got everyone graduating with the DPT. And so part of the DPT, the Doctorate of Physical Therapy, is a high level of skill of differential diagnosis. And what that is the ability to rule out or rule in highly complicated or potentially serious pathologies, you know? Mm-hmm. And part of the reason that the DPT is getting that education, the country is strongly trying to move toward a direct access model, which is a model of care where the PT is able to see a client off the street without being seen by a medical doctor first and requiring a prescription. Mm-hmm. So this exists in New York, and right. so potentially I could see anyone off the street with any type of ailment, and I could be able to treat them or refer them to the correct provider. Hmm. PTs possess that knowledge in order to be able to see that. So if you, for example, you see someone off the street who walks in with knee pain, the PT possesses the knowledge to sort of ask the right questions to find out, is this something orthopedic that I can treat? Is this something like an ACL tear where maybe I should refer them to an orthopedic surgeon because I can do my special tests and look at the knee? Is this something systemic where I can ask questions and start to think, well, maybe this is some sort of RA, OA. Do I need to send them to a rheumatologist? Or through asking more questions, is there mm-hmm. something more involved? Is this pain that's possibly related to cancer, et cetera, et cetera? The responsibility of the PT is to gather that information and then refer out and to know who to refer out to. The time, the ability to ask the correct questions, the ability to get a hands-on and evaluate a body part and do special testing gives the PT the ability to just have a richer, more layered approach to assessment, I think, than your traditional orthopedist. And then it's almost helpful to the orthopedist if you can say, hey, this might just be a little bit of patellofemoral pain, and the orthopedist would see that in their office and then just refer that person right back out to PT, and you're not clogging up mm-hmm, a mm-hmm. busy orthopedist office anyway. And I say that just by having conversations with right. one of my partners whose husband's an orthopedic surgeon and knowing that he knows he can't do much for patellofemoral pain. And so I think mm-hmm. that, yeah, I think that you get a much richer experience, and you'll get more out of that first visit if it is if it does need a PT's skill. So if you've got 1 hour and you can either go to an orthopedist or a PT, you're going to get more out of it if you go see the PT, because you'll hopefully leave with some treatment and some hopefully a homework program to get you on your path immediately toward recovery.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think in that time too, what I think maybe what a lot of people don't realize about physical therapy and the one-on-one connection that you have with a therapist too is just patient education. Like you were saying, you get something to do at home, and then there's a lot more time to ask questions and for the patient to really exactly. learn about what's going on. That often I think when people unfortunately visit a doctor and they have those 5 minutes of the doctor, yeah, they're like, do you have any questions? Yeah. No? Okay, bye. And like, it's like, but maybe I do. But maybe it takes a little time back and forth in communication for those questions to surface or for the patient to feel like they really have the opportunity to ask all those questions that they want to ask. So I think that's really important, is that question and answer and educational component as well.
I think so much of our job as PTs is education. I can't tell you how many times I've had somebody come in and after the first session, they feel so much better because you take someone with an ankle sprain and they just need to know what's going on, how it heals, how to be their own anti-inflammatory, how to, you know, walk normally, manage it. And once you empower them with education, it's the empowerment, I think, that helps with the recovery, but it's also the education. It's both. Mm-hmm. And like you said, and just seeing them for who they are and listening instead of just saying, oh, ankle sprain, you know, 6 weeks, PT, and we'll see you back. It's, I mean, that's your traditional orthopedist visit versus like really laying it out there. So many times it's just, it's so helpful.
Sure.
Yeah. So I'm excited for you to get out there and start practicing.
Me too. I got a little ways to go.
It's good. We just need so many more open minds in PT. And I got to tell you, I would teach at Hunter. And every year that I would go in for my lecture, I would notice a shift in the students. And like, it was a shift in openness. It was a shift in understanding of the different type of other modalities that exist out there. And I feel like the PTs that are coming out now are just so smart and so ready and just so excited to push this profession into a like place of like a new level. Just like, let's really get it out there what PTs can do. And that's super duper exciting for me, because I feel like PTs sometimes get a bad rep, and we just need to let people know like all we can do and all we're capable of, and just churn out some awesome PTs like yourself. So it's something so exciting for me.
And thanks for coming on here, because this is another big piece of just that educational component of getting the word out there to what I think in terms of what PTs do and just all the facets of the profession. Yeah.
It is
pretty vast and exciting. So, Well, thanks, Diana. Thanks for taking the time in your busy day. And it was great catching up with you. And I hope we have an opportunity to work together or do a project together or something. Or hopefully I'll get to your training for PTs at some point when I'm not all
wrapped
up in school.
We will be here. You just let me know when you're ready. All right. Thanks,
cool.
Caitlin.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in for my conversation with Diana Zotos. Please check out her website, dianazotos.com, or find out more about her educational programs with Threes Phys Yoga Method at threesphysyoga.com. If you want to find out more about me and what I'm up to, you can find me at my website, caitlincasella.com. My email's on there. If you have any questions, if you want to reach out and say hi, I'd love to continue the conversation. If you have any questions for any of our guests that I can pass along to them, maybe do a follow-up, please let me know. And I'd really like for all of you as listeners to be a part of this evolving conversation. And I'll speak with you next time.